Selling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time to get all the info you need on the Vanderbilt Commodores. This is the Anchor Down Podcast with Vanderbilt reporter Max Hurd.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it, Max.
On Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
And the Game Nashville app.
It's time to anchor down and listen up to the Anchor Down Podcast here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. I'm your host, Max Hurd. Let's talk all things Vanderbilt Commodores on this special one day late Tuesday edition of the podcast on thegamenashville.com and over the air on this Tuesday, September the 17th, here at 7 o'clock on 102.5 The Game. Push back off of our normal Monday time slot because of the Preds preseason double dip yesterday. How about the Preds sweeping those Florida Panthers, first time back on the Bridgestone Arena ice? Pushing on towards the regular season opener the first week of October. Pred season getting underway means that here over the air, we will settle in starting next week into a much more permanent time here over the air on 102.5 The Game. We will be on 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. here in the Central Time Zone every Monday night through the end of football season here on 102.5 The Game. Again, 9 to 10 p.m. Monday nights is when we will be over the air here on the Anchor Down Podcast. For those listening over the air on 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app right now, as you could tell by the name of the show, we are primarily a podcast. That's how we've been going for the last year. Now over the air on Monday nights, but you can hear new episodes when they come out, typically on Monday afternoons once we get back to our normal schedule beginning next week. Go to thegamenashville.com, click on Pod Center, and click on Anchor Down to see our full episode archives. You can also follow us on Twitter at 1025thegame, and also follow me on Twitter to see our latest episodes as they come out at Max Herz Talks, M-A-X. H-E-R-Z-T-A-L-K-S is my personal Twitter handle where you will find lots of Vanderbilt content. Going to talk some Vandy football on the show today. Commodores coming out of their week 3 bye. They will have 2 bye weeks this season, as everybody does all across the country. They took it early in the middle of a pretty gruesome start. Very tough schedule. We knew it coming in. The general sentiment and my sentiment was if Vanderbilt were to go 1-2 in their first 3 games, it would be a positive. Well, they're 0-2 after losses to Georgia and Purdue, the week off, and now back home against a top 10 team for the second time in as many home games coming in. Opened up against an SEC foe in Georgia at home. Now, second SEC home game. The very rare visit from SEC West foe, the fourth-ranked LSU Tigers. Under the current scheduling format, they come through once every 12 seasons. And boy, will they be coming through. Expecting a big LSU crowd this weekend. They travel extremely well. Don't play in Nashville very much. Nashville has been such a destination for everybody across the Southeast, which means a lot of visiting football fans at every game. So, should be a fun atmosphere. It's also Parents Weekend for Vanderbilt, which usually falls on a non-conference game in the middle of September. But this year, it is on a conference game. So, we will have a funny mix between the purple and gold and the parents of Vanderbilt freshmen. Different demographics there. So that should be a fun time. We have a great guest to break down LSU, and he does not cover the Tigers on the beat anymore, but he is as good as it gets when it comes to LSU football news, analysis, and everything in between. Second time guest on the podcast, actually, Ross Dellinger. He is a national college football reporter now for Sports Illustrated. Before that, he was the LSU beat writer for the Baton Rouge Advocate, the primary beat writer for all LSU sports, focusing specifically on football for a long time. Then he stayed in Baton Rouge, continued to cover the Tigers as a writer for Sports Illustrated. Now he covers national college football and actually no longer lives in Baton Rouge, lives in Washington, D.C. But he is as good as it gets for LSU coverage as you listen here on this Tuesday, the 17th. An article just came out today written by Ross on SI.com about LSU's new offense. We'll talk about that and more, preview this game as we bring in Sports Illustrated's Ross Dellinger here on the Anchor Down Podcast. Ross, thanks so much for joining us again here on the Anchor Down Podcast. Your second time on the pod. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Let's talk some Vandy LSU. Of course, you were on the LSU beat for such a long time. You follow the program so closely. You were with them for the game in Austin against Texas a couple weekends ago. Just to start, I want to get your impressions on how the early portion of the season has gone for the Tigers.
Well, it's certainly probably a lot, maybe not a lot different than people expected, but much better than probably even the highest expectations. I think they've even exceeded that. You know, they've not only are they 3-0, but obviously one of those wins were on the road at Texas, and I think there were a lot of people that didn't, even though they were favored, ended up being favored by a touchdown. I don't know that a lot of people really expected them to go in and win that game. And then the way they did it, winning a shootout, they kind of showed off that new offense of theirs. And so, yeah, it's been a great 3 weeks if you're an LSU fan, for sure.
Let's talk about that new offense. You just had an article come out earlier today on Sports Illustrated. Out of the Dark Ages, how LSU's lethal new spread attack was built. We heard about it all offseason. We heard about it at SEC Media Days, LSU bringing Joe Brady in from the NFL to take over this offense and make it look really the total opposite of how it's always worked. So this article just came out today. You did a great job on it. Can you just summarize kind of what you learned in doing it as someone who has seen this offense for such a long time now in its new form?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to describe. I think for LSU's fan base, their resentment of, in a way, of offensive football around the nation, because they were always, you know, under Les Miles and even under Ed Orgeron his first couple years, really, up until late last year, they were doing a lot of old school things. You know, their offense was more of a two receiver set with a tight end or two, and sometimes a fullback. It certainly with Les Miles, a lot of times a fullback, and they were kind of, you know, they were resisting. Les was always resisting change, you know. He thought his way would be better. So you got to kind of understand first, before you understand LSU's new offense, you know, where they're coming from. And outside of excluding the triple option teams, I mean, they were basically them, you know, maybe Wisconsin, Boston College, were programs who had forever had traditional offenses. And now, you know, Orgeron over the offseason, knowing, I think, what he had in his quarterback, Joe Burrow, decided to do an overhaul. And what he did was hire a 29-year-old who'd never been a coordinator, college coordinator before. He was basically, you know, he was working for the Saints, and he was like an NFL, it was basically an NFL graduate assistant position, their version of a graduate assistant. And he's pretty low paid. He was the lowest paid on staff. And, you know, he did a lot of film work, basically breaking down film and stuff like that. It was almost like an intern position, and Ed Orgeron hired him to come in, bring the RPO, and bring the Saints running game or Saints passing game to LSU. And what they're doing is lining up in the shotgun, spreading out with 3-4, sometimes 5 receivers, and they're throwing the ball a good bit, you know. And we've it's kind of an awakening, you know, for an LSU program that had for a long time kind of been so archaic offensively.
Ross Dellinger is our guest here on the Anchor Down podcast, national college football writer for Sports Illustrated, and covered LSU football and all sports for a really long time, first for the Baton Rouge Advocate, then for Sports Illustrated as well. The article he just mentioned, Out of the Dark Ages, How LSU's Lethal New Spread Attack Was Built, came out earlier today on SI.com. Definitely check that out. Vandy fans, SEC fans, as we get ready for this weekend. Ross, I want to stick with that point and also back to that Texas game that we talked about a little bit earlier. 45-38, LSU goes on the road and wins. Whether it's the amount of points they gave up in that game, which was a shootout, like you said, and they did enough to win it, or things with the offense that have maybe been a little bit of growing pains through the first three games with the new scheme, what improvements still have to be made for LSU going into week four with the week five bye looming now going into their SEC opener?
Well, that's the thing. When you do go to the spread, the up-tempo and a lot of passing, you know, you lose a lot of the things that you had defensively, a lot of the advantages you had defensively with the older offense. And we get into that a little bit in that piece, but, you know, LSU played 85 plays, I believe, against Texas has the most in LSU defense has been on the field in 5 years. So that's what happens, you know, and you're on the field a lot, and not only that, but you lose the talent possession battle. LSU lost the talent possession battle to Texas by like 8 minutes. And that puts your, you know, your defense at a disadvantage. And so that's all part of the offensive switch. You know, they've got to get adjusted to play, you know, be on the field a lot more and just playing a lot more the defense does. And we saw kind of the disadvantage of that against Texas and the bad side effect to that against Texas. So I'm sure in a way there will be little tweaks defensively because of that. And I'm sure too, there'll be offensive tweaks. Ed Orgeron, I think, said it this week or at least last week about how they probably need to run the ball a little better, you know, stay on the ground a little more. So I think there will be, some corrections happening for LSU when you have an offense like they have this new kind of scheme. There are a lot of benefits, but there are also some things like the defense, you know, being on the field for so long. So they're very happy about the offense, but now they are concerned, you know, about the defense. So it's always something.
I don't think LSU would have much trouble running the ball against Vanderbilt as they go into this week, but I imagine that it's tempting for them to throw quite a bit with how poorly Vanderbilt has defended the pass. They'll also be without one of their starting corners, Randall Haney, for the first half because of a targeting call way back 2 weeks ago against Purdue. The suspension for the half will carry over. If LSU goes all out in the air and leaves the first team offense in long enough, is this a game where Joe Burrow could push 500 passing yards?
Well, yeah, for sure. He almost did it against Texas. You got to think, he could probably do that against Vandy. And I know going into this game, and I didn't know about the cornerback pass, so that would be interesting. I'm sure they'll pick on that other side or that side quite a bit. But, you know, Derek Mason's had some pretty good defenses in his career, and he's known kind of a defensive coach. So I'm really curious to see, you know, what he does defensively against his new LSU team. When you prepare for LSU, especially SEC West teams that see them every year, you prepare a certain way. You historically prepared a certain way where they're going to be, you know, in the eye a lot. They're going to have a lot of tight ends. It's going to be a lot of 21 personnel type thing. And now they're running a lot of 11 personnel or 10 personnel. Mm-hmm. With a one running back and no tight end. So now you have to approach it differently. So for a defensive guy like Derek, I wonder how he's going to approach it. It'll be interesting to kind of watch that unfold. You know, I saw the spread was around like 24 points. And maybe that's fair, but to me, LSU playing at 11 a.m., and playing on the road against a guy that knows defenses pretty well. In a team, you got to remember, LSU got off to a pretty rough start against Northwestern State at home last week. I just wonder if it's going to be a little closer for a little while, you know?
Talking with Ross Dellinger, covers college football for Sports Illustrated, previewing Vanderbilt and LSU this weekend here on the Anchor Down podcast. When Vanderbilt has the ball coming out of the bye week, they're going to want to get the ball more to their big three playmakers, Keyshawn Vaughn, Jarrett Pinkney, and Kalijah Lipscomb. Do you think LSU has the personnel to lock down all three of those guys at the same time?
Well, that's the problem, you know, with LSU defensively. They have some serious issues depth-wise in the secondary. There was a game. Well, it was a Texans game. Already one of LSU's starting cornerbacks is a true freshman. Now he's a really good true freshman. And Derek Stingley, I mean, he's one of the best in the nation, not just one of the best freshman corners, but one of the best freshmen in the nation. He's incredible. But over on the other side, there's a pretty good drive. Christian Fulton is the starter, and he's been pretty solid. But Texas picked on him quite a bit. He got hurt at one point, and off the bench, LSU brought in another true freshman. And behind that true freshman, there's another true freshman. So as far as cornerback, there's a depth issue there, and Texas really picked on it. They did a good job with it. I mean, Ellinger had like 440 passing yards. You know, they were able to kind of rip through LSU, and then if you saw This past week, Todd Harris, one of LSU's safeties, was ruled out for the season because of an injury. So they're already down, already in the secondary. Now they've got another guy down. So they're talented in the secondary, very talented. The starters are guys who are going to probably go, not even in, they're going to get drafted, and I'm thinking it might be more of like a, most of them might be a first-round draft pick, and some of them it might be more of like a top-10 draft pick. I think Stingley, Grant Delpit are guys that are probably eventually go in the top-10 in the draft. They're talented, but, man, when they get somebody hurt, there's a depth issues there. So Vandy can exploit some of that if they've got, their backups in, or Vandy can kind of spread the field and LSU get more, forcing LSU to get more DBs on the field. That's a plus for the Commodores. And then you look, LSU's front seven, and I think they're going to be without two starters again this week. So they've got some holes there.
Ross Dellinger from Sports Illustrated is with us. He was also with us on this show in January, talking about a story that he's covered for a long time, first locally in Baton Rouge, then with the national publication, alcohol sales at SEC venues. This is a story that I've always been passionate about as well. I always thought it was ridiculous, and archaic was the word that Ross liked to use about the SEC's ban on beer sales outside of premium areas. And you were right there to cover the beginning of the story as LSU's athletic department began to lead the charge. And finally, this past summer, the SEC said on a school-by-school basis, you're good to go. Vanderbilt is participating. Of course, LSU is too. And it's only been a couple games. But, Ross, I just wanted to ask you, what are the effects that you've seen from it so far? And what's it like from a journalistic perspective to cover a story for so many years and really be able to have an impact on it?
Yeah, LSU, as a beat writer there, they were back in, 13, 14, 15, they were stomping for it pretty hard with the SEC. LSU, they were kind of leading the charge. I think them, Ole Miss, and probably A&M were the ones really kind of pushing for this outwardly and the LSU's case publicly. And they did. They eventually got their way, as it probably should. I mean, the federal government does not run everything in the nation of states. We all have our state governments wherever we live, and it's kind of the same with the SEC. The SEC had this rule that was running all of the conference, no matter where you were located. Well, I think the SEC's footprint, is in maybe 8 states or 9 states. I mean, and there are different cultures in those communities, and what goes on at LSU probably doesn't go on necessarily at Alabama or Georgia as far as the community and alcohol culture and things like that. So it was time for the SEC to do what everybody else did, let the conferences or let the states, so to speak, kind of decide for themselves. And since then, I think you've gotten some happy campers. I think LSU sold something exorbitant amount, like 30,000 cans of beer their first the first game at Tiger Stadium, I saw. So they've had some good stuff there, and you're not going to see it for another few years. It's too small of a sample size now, but I think you're going to see it help attendance.
Long overdue for sure. Ross Dellinger, thanks so much for doing this. Sports Illustrated college football writer, the man for LSU, even though he's not in Baton Rouge anymore, but it's okay. Ross Dellinger on Twitter, at Ross Dellinger, D-E-L-L-E-N-G-E-R. Thanks again for joining us.
No problem. Thank you.
Appreciate Ross Dellinger, kind enough to join us here on the Anchor Down podcast. SEC beer sales, a big victory. Go back and find our episode from January on it before SEC prohibition was lifted if you want to hear my full thoughts on it, how ridiculous it was, and more of the reporting done by Ross Dellinger over the past half decade about the issue that, as he said, LSU initially raised, finally passed this summer. There used to be no alcohol sales in SEC sporting venues outside of quote-unquote premium areas, which for a long time basically meant club seating. And then at LSU meant areas where we want to sell booze because we think it's ridiculous. Well, now you can sell it everywhere. Vanderbilt is one of the schools participating this year. I don't think everybody's on board. I think there are four or five SEC schools that are not selling alcohol at football this season. They didn't have a lot of time to get it together after it was approved. Still, that's not an excuse. I'm very glad Vanderbilt's a part of it. I've talked about this on air a ton. I'm sure I'll do it again in full at some point. But to me, as a Vanderbilt graduate, a recent Vanderbilt graduate, who's covered the sports and seen them from many different angles for the past six academic years, that is the number one tool that Vanderbilt has at its disposal to enhance student engagement and interaction with the athletics department. There will be more students at events. They will come earlier. They will stay longer. And also, it is a revenue tool for Vanderbilt if used properly. So we'll find out more about that as, like Ross said, the sample size gets a little bit bigger. But I really appreciate Ross, not just for his expertise in reporting, but also for how much he did with that story. Because it's something I'm passionate about, too, and he used his voice and his platform to make it more of a public issue. And it gets to the commissioner of the conference. And there you go. The AD's vote on it. I think this will be a tough, tough matchup for Vanderbilt. We'll talk a little bit more Vanderbilt-LSU on the other side of this break. And then also a very important going on this weekend at the game. It will be Vanderbilt's first Turner's Heroes game, honoring Turner Cockrell. Earlier on this Tuesday afternoon after Derek Mason's press conference, Cody Markell, Vanderbilt tight end and Turner Cockrell's best friend, spoke to the media about what will be going on this weekend, the foundation, Turner's Heroes, that he started earlier this year, what they're doing, and more. Very important charitable endeavor. We'll talk some football, and then we'll get to the more important stuff. Honoring Turner Cockrell this weekend. This is Max Herz. Anchor Down Podcast returns after this here on 102.5 The Game.
This is the Anchor Down Podcast.
Welcome back to the Anchor Down Podcast, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Max Herz talking Vanderbilt football and LSU on this Tuesday, September the 17th on thegamenashville.com and over the air on 102.5 The Game on this Tuesday night. Just mentally preparing myself to hear Colin Baton Rouge by Garth Brooks at every single bar, restaurant, airport Tootsies, anywhere where someone is getting paid and holding a guitar, we are going to hear it everywhere this weekend. Oh, my goodness. LSU fans are going to be coming to Nashville, 11 a.m. Central Time kickoff, Vanderbilt and the Tigers, with Coach O leading the charge. Number four, LSU at Vanderbilt, Tigers 3-0 with wins over Georgia Southern, Texas, and Northwestern State. One of those wins is not like the others. But it's a very, very solid LSU team, an explosive, high-scoring offense that has been in at least the 40s every game. Beat Texas 45-38, as you heard Ross Dellinger talking about in our previous segment. Ross Dellinger from Sports Illustrated here on the Anchor Down Pod. Some questions on defense, but they have some stars in that defensive backfield. Jacoby Stevens, Grant Delpit, the freshman Derek Stingley, who Ross Dellinger sang the praises of. So it'll be a tough, tough matchup for Vanderbilt. Just some things to watch as we get into this ballgame. Randall Haney suspended for the first half. Vanderbilt redshirt sophomore cornerback after a not-so-great targeting call. Not-so-great in terms of I don't think it should have been called, as opposed to it was an extremely malicious hit. The ball carrier for Purdue did the majority of the moving, in my opinion. Haney still called, ejected. That takes place in the second half of the game, which it did. You sit the entire first half of the next game. Even if you have a bye week in between. Yeah, I don't think they forget about that type of stuff. So Randall Haney will not be in the game for Vanderbilt. Just another reason why I think LSU's passing game and Joe Burrow will be able to have an absolutely massive day against this Vanderbilt pass defense that has left a bit to be desired, especially in the Purdue game, especially in the second half of that game. Gave up some big plays in the pass game, so LSU will be using their big play receivers, Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase, a little bit of Terrence Marshall also in there, who's a bigger body at 6'4", 200. And Joe Burrow, the senior second-year starter signal caller for the Tigers, transferred from the Ohio State, and that's not copyrighted, so I can say it on the radio. Been masterful through the first three games. 471 passing yards on 31 completions, 39 attempts against Texas in the 45-38 true road game top 10 win. Completed 80% of his passes. Four touchdowns. Again, 471 yards on fewer than 40 attempts. So that's over 10 yards per attempt, not even per completion. He's been extremely impressive this season. Joe Brady, the man they brought in to mentor him, or not mentor him, but re-scheme the LSU offense, who Ross Dellinger wrote about today, giving Joe Burrow everything he needs to be extremely successful. I think he could throw for 500 yards this weekend. Just depends on, really, Vanderbilt's offense a little bit, too, in terms of how much they can hang in the game, dictating whether or not LSU will be able to throw. And you heard Ross say as well that LSU wants to establish the run a little bit, kind of get that into the offense. It hasn't been there as much, but they're going to be tempted to throw. They are going to be tempted to throw. I think they will a lot, and I think they should. So we'll watch that matchup. Joe Burrow will be airing it out, at least I expect him to. When his age was still in the single digits back in the mid-2000s, Joe Burrow's dad, Jimmy, was the defensive coordinator at Ohio University. He was hired in the spring of 2005. The Bobcats also hired a new wide receivers coach that year. His name's Derek Mason. Vanderbilt's head coach and LSU's quarterback's father coached together in Athens, Ohio. Jerry Gadowski was there as well, Vanderbilt's new offensive coordinator, who's been on Derek Mason's staff here in Nashville since the beginning, was the quarterback's coach of that OU team. Of course, Vanderbilt was some other Ohio University connections. Austin Everson, previously on the Vanderbilt staff, was the quarterback for the Bobcats while all three of those guys were coaching. And Jason Grooms, who's Vanderbilt's associate athletic director in charge of all football administration operations, was basically the heart and soul of Ohio football before he came to Vanderbilt. And actually was a finalist for the Ohio athletic director job this past summer. Lots of OU connections on this Vanderbilt football staff, but Derek Mason first met young Joey Burrow when he was 8. And you'll hear coming up, we're going to reprise an interview from earlier Tuesday, heard on our midday show, Darren Donick and Chase, weekly segment with Derek Mason on the show, 1 p.m. Tuesdays here on 102.5 The Game. Coach Mason will reminisce a little bit on Joe Burrow. All right, I promised we would get to what really mattered with this game. And again, football will take a backseat to this, without a doubt. Vanderbilt will be honoring the late Turner Cockrell, who passed away from melanoma late 2018. They'll be honoring him over the course of this weekend. Helmet stickers will be a part of it. I imagine that means, we don't know this for sure, it hasn't been announced, but I imagine this means that Vanderbilt will be debuting their new gray uniforms, which have the 82 screws on the helmet on the side of the battleship style to honor Turner Cockrell, who wore uniform number 82. Vanderbilt will be looking to fund a $50,000 discovery grant to Monroe Carroll Jr. Vanderbilt Children's Hospital in Turner Cockrell's name. And half of the fundraising is very thankfully and rather beautifully already done. Derek Mason and his wife Leanne have pledged to match every donation up to $25,000. So the target number, because of the Vanderbilt head coach's generosity, has been slashed in half. Cody Markell, Turner Cockrell's best friend and Vanderbilt's senior tight end, spoke to media earlier today about the weekend, about the nonprofit he has founded in Turner's name called Turner's Heroes. Turner Cockrell, a big fan of superhero films, Marvel, The Avengers, the entire series. So the foundation has taken a superhero theme, and it's been super so far. I'll let Cody Markell do the talking, Vanderbilt tight end, about honoring Turner Cockrell and the Turner's Heroes Foundation.
Just kind of describe Turner's Heroes and my relationship with Turner. So Turner and I were the two tight ends that came in the 2016 class. And that obviously means you spend a lot of time together as soon as you get on campus. And that's something that was kind of an instant connection. And I know I can speak for guys like Drew and Cam and Deuce and Cade and Dare. We've always been really close, even from that first summer. So his illness after kind of at the end of his sophomore year and beginning of his junior year, that was kind of a, we all kind of battled that together. And that was always kind of our mindset, is we were always there for him and he was always there for us. And no matter what he was going through, he'd walk in with a smile on his face, cracking jokes, always wanting to lift us up, even though he was the one who needed to be lifted up. And that was something that was just so special about him. And anyone that you talk to will say the same thing. And so after he kind of passed away, there was kind of a hole left in kind of our roommate group and our friend group. And I knew that we had to do kind of something to honor him, and I didn't know what that was at the time. And I'll say that down in Houston at the Texas Bowl, I think it was Christmas Day, we actually went to MD Anderson Cancer Center, where he got his experimental immunotherapy treatment that he actually didn't end up finishing. But we still talked to his surgeon and his PA there, Dr. Amy Hessel, and she was just incredible. Everything about her and everything that she said about him, even the short amount of time that they spent together, was exactly what we felt. And that experience really opened my eyes and be like, okay, I want to do something in a hospital setting and to help kids that were kind of like Turner. And so that's kind of how Turner's Heroes came to fruition. I've been working on it since early January. We incorporated in February, and then we officially launched in June or early July. But kind of we have three prongs of things we do. The first being we put on events in the children's hospital. And these can be as simple as playing bingo with the kids, which we did last Thursday, or a more kind of major event where we basically have these design capes that have Turner's Heroes right here. And then we get to basically go to the children's hospital, Monroe Carroll Jr. Children's at Vanderbilt, and we basically spent 2 hours designing capes with these kids, and it was really special. And I know all the volunteers there were like, wow, like that two hours flew by, and they all wanted to do it like immediately again. And it was something that was really special. And kind of the thinking about that is, I mean, these kids are our heroes, these patients, whether they're battling cancer or something else. One of the moms actually came up to me and she's like, yeah, we've been here for 18 days and just coming down here for an hour and being able to spend time with you guys designing capes and just kind of escaping from reality for a little bit was something that was really special to them. And that like made everything worth it for me. And I know that Turner would be looking on that and saying, wow, like this is exactly what I want my legacy to be. So the second portion is kind of what we're doing this weekend. So as you guys, I know you guys have heard, and thank you, Adam, for writing that story. It was incredible. But we're trying to raise $50,000 in 82 hours, and obviously 82 is his number. The site is live now, but the actual like kickoff of the donation drive is on kickoff of the game, and it will probably go to about 9 p.m. on Tuesday night. And it really is a way to fund or to honor Turner and fund a discovery grant, which is pretty unique to the Children's Hospital here, in that we'll have a panel of individuals, whether it be, and I know that Noel and Randy Cockrell, his parents, will be on that. Coach Mason will be on that panel as well because of his donation. And many different researchers will kind of present their idea for the grant to that panel, and they'll get to choose. And all these research grants will be focused on pediatric cancer research. So all the money that is being raised right now will go to fund a specific grant towards pediatric cancer research, which I think is super special. So that's kind of the second thing. And then the third thing, we are working with Alatoona High School right now, which is Turner's alma mater. And they're holding a Turner's Heroes game, and they're dedicating it to Turner. But really, we want to expand that to any Nashville high schools, any high schools anywhere that want to hold like a Turner's Heroes games. It doesn't have to be in honor of Turner. It can be in honor of anyone. And that's kind of what we're doing here this weekend, is we really want to honor Turner. And we have a bunch of things planned to kind of do that throughout the game, which is going to be really special.
Beautifully said by Vanderbilt tight end Cody Markell about his late best friend Turner Cockrell, passed from melanoma last winter, how the Vanderbilt football team has grieved and what they're doing. Turner's Heroes. Trying to raise $50,000 for a discovery grant at the Monroe Carroll Jr. Children's Hospital at the LSU game this weekend. Best part about all of that? They weren't sure what they wanted to do until the bowl game, the Texas Bowl last year, when they went to the MD Anderson Cancer Center, where Turner was treated. It's a magnet for cancer treatment all across the country and the world. And meeting with Turner's doctors and doing the service, the community service that they did there, was what sparked the idea for the foundation. Cody Markell and his teammates weren't sure what they wanted to do to honor their friend who had just passed away. But that was what clinched it. The thrill of helping others and the thrill of interacting with those kids started something and has continued to pay off and then some. Vanderbilt football, LSU, 11 a.m. Saturday. Plenty going on to honor Turner Cockrell. If you can donate, please do. If not, please continue to follow this. This is special. This is meaningful. Take a break. Take a break. Come back. Derek Mason was on our air today for his weekly Tuesday radio interview with Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and Chase McCabe. We will hear the highlights of that next. You're on the Anchor Down Podcast, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
The Anchor Down Podcast is on.
Welcome back to the Anchor Down Podcast here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Max Sir is talking Vanderbilt football on this Tuesday night, September the 17th, 102.5 The Game, thegamenashville.com. Earlier today, Vanderbilt football head coach Derek Mason jooined our midday show, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Monday through Friday, here on The Game Nashville, 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and Chase McCabe hold it down. They talk to Derek Mason every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Here's the best to coach heading into the LSU matchup.
We head over to Weston, our weekly chat with their fine football coach. Derek Mason is on the line. Coach, good afternoon. How you doing?
Doing well, gentlemen. How are you?
How was the off week for you?
Good, good. I mean, we had a chance to look and address some things, and that's really what you got to do. I know it's an early bye, but we had enough things that we needed to talk about and fix, and believe me, when you don't have a game, it just sits on your mind. So we just slowly but surely, you know, started to chip away at the things that you know needed to be fixed. Whether you talk about the focus, the discipline, you know, man, where we're at, you know, penalty wise, what we need to do, you know, defensively to make sure, man, that we don't, you know, find ourselves, you know, falling into dysfunction, you know, late in ball games and needing to be better, you know, in terms of critical situations, because that's what showed up, and that was some healing. I mean, that, there's healing in that process. It's sort of like, okay, man, you have a bad day, and you know, like you're ready to get back to work, and you know, as you get through the work and you start investing in the process, what you start to realize is that, hey, listen, the sun came up, opportunity to get better is today, and let's make sure we do it, and that's what we did.
That's interesting. So, with that being said, were you able to decompress and step away for a few days, or was it all business during the off week?
You know what? I took a quick moment, you know, man, with my wife, you know, at the end of the week. That was you know needed. I think in this, you know, she's my rock. She sees what everybody doesn't get a chance to see, and you know, man, just being able to, you know, recenter.
Sure.
You know, man, so to speak, and just, you know, talk about the things that matter, you know, FaceTime my girls, and really, you know, man, get back to work. My wife's one who will give me, you know, man, a swift kick in the butt and say, listen, I don't know what you think you're doing, boss, but, you know, man, it's time to get back to work. So I thought that was good. You know, she balances me, you know, man, she makes me whole. And at the end of the day, you know, I'm so blessed to have somebody who understands exactly who I am.
Does she have a whistle?
You know what? She doesn't have a whistle, but, you know, she cracks a mean whip. Yeah.
You have a new quarterback. You have a new offensive coordinator, though he's been on the staff. You got some injuries on your offensive line. Certainly against Purdue, you guys had big moments of success. Lots of yards, some nice plays. It looks like it's there. Just needs to be sort of meshing and clicking on all cylinders. How much progress do you think you can still make there? It looks like the ceiling is high. You just have to get there.
Yeah, the ceiling is high. We knew we had talent going into the season, but it's not about the talent. I think it's talent, time, investment, and do you take care of your treasures? I think, you know, the treasure right now is that this is a good football team. So we can't waste opportunity. The margin for error is slim in this conference. It's slim, you know, here for us at Vanderbilt because we got to be on. We got to play smart. The focus and discipline always have to show up. And for us, you know, I mean, it's been mediocre at best. So that starts with me. And then permeates to the team. I have to demand more, ask for more. But by the same token, not being a panic. I think, you know, having been here before and looking at, you know, where we are, the opportunity for this team to rise up and play its best ball is definitely in front of us. So that's what we have to do. Let's make sure, man, we don't have knee-jerk reactions. All we, you know, continue to do is invest in the process.
I saw your generous donation to the Turner Cockrell fundraiser that's coming up here, and I want to give you the floor here to create a little awareness. Most Vanderbilt fans certainly are familiar with his story, a player, a young man for you that died last November of cancer, but I know there's some special things going on over the next few days. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, you know, Turner's Heroes, you know, was established by you know, one of our players, you know, Cody Markell and you know, Randy and Noel, you know, Cockrell, you know, were brought on board. You know, man, with this and you know, man, believe me, I me and my wife talked about a lot of things, you know, that still may be in the works. But the reality was, you know, man, trying to make sure, man, that we could do something, you know, impactful to help jumpstart this foundation that I believe, you know, is all about getting it right. Okay, it's about the idea of providing, you know, man, a platform for young people who are, you know, experiencing something, you know, I mean, horrific in this battle with cancer, and being able to, you know, I mean, establish grants, you know, I mean, that go to specific causes, you know, and help, you know, I mean, the fight, you know, help with the fight in cancer and to really find a cure. So, you know, I mean, the idea behind it is, you know, having these contact points, you know, with cancer patients that you know, allow them to decompress and move away from, you know, the harsh reality that they're living today, and just to have a moment of realizing that they're heroes. They're heroes to you know, I mean, the people that they don't know by the way they live their lives and the way that they you know, like, continue to stay in the fight. And I think it's important. You know, their stories don't always get a chance to be seen, but I think in those moments when they have a chance to put on a cape and realize that they are heroes and they have people, you know, been spending time with them, they understand that they're loved. So, you know, for me, it's personal, and it's been personal, and it'll probably be personal for the rest of my life. So I just have to continue again, you know, man, to be about that process, because that's something, man, that I believe in. I believe in Turner. He was a hero to me in terms of how he lived his life, and what we have to do is continue to push forward.
Always enjoy hearing Derek Mason on with the guys. Derek Mason on Tuesday afternoons, 1 p.m. with Darren, Donick, and Chase, who go 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. as part of our daily live programming, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. live and local here on 102.5 The Game, and streaming on the Game Nashville app and thegamenashville.com. Take a break, come back. As we finish up previewing Vanderbilt football and LSU, we got to take a baseball angle on this thing, don't we? Little Vandy boys love, and a little bit of love for the two most athletic brothers in SEC history. Yeah, and they don't wear black and gold either. Finish up the show on the other side. It's the Anchor Down Podcast here on ESPN. 102.5 The Game.
You're listening to the Anchor Down Podcast.
Welcome back to the Anchor Down Podcast here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Max Herr is with you as we wrap up our hour-long preview of Vanderbilt football and LSU this Saturday, 11 a.m. Central, Vanderbilt Stadium, SEC home game. It'll be on SEC Network. The SEC Saturday night crew will be adjusting their alarm clocks to wake up early for this one. Yeah, on the TV broadcast side. Tom Hart, Cole Kubelik, and Jordan Rogers, those three guys do a great job. They will be on the TV call for the Doors and the Tigers. Got to take a baseball angle with this one, don't we? Vanderbilt and LSU always have fun when they get together on the baseball diamond. Wish it would happen every year. Stupid divisions. Got to get that fixed. But Vanderbilt baseball will be honored at halftime of this game for the national championship. Even the departed, drafted, graduated members of the national championship team should be back. Minor league seasons are over. So they will be honored at halftime. Not sure exactly what the plan is. I don't believe they will be getting their championship rings. That is probably going to be later in the fall, but no date has been announced yet. So unless that's supposed to be a surprise, I don't think that's what's going to happen. But we'll see. Always good to see the Vandy boys back together. They'll be signing autographs in the Vandyville tailgate area the morning leading up to the game. So check the Vanderbilt website for exactly when and where that will be happening as the trophy continues to tour around. Tim Corbin will be the guest anchor drop before the game. So get to your seats by about 10:45 to see that happen. They'll be going out there with the two Naval Commodores to drop the anchor. It's always good to see Corbs getting the guys hyped. I would have preferred Alex Bregman and Dansby Swanson just arm wrestling over the Star V at midfield, but I am told they are both busy at the moment. While we talk SEC baseball, I just want to give a shout out to my two favorite LSU athletes of all time, their brothers. Antoine Duplantis, who just graduated from the baseball team, felt like he was there for 20 years. May have been, who knows. Leadoff man, center fielder, speedster. Such an SEC ball player. We'll see if he makes the major leagues. He's in the Mets organization, actually playing on the same minor league team as Jake Mangum, who is basically the same player, but at Mississippi State. I've been saying all summer, the Brooklyn Cyclones have more SEC hits on their roster than every other New York Penn League team combined, just because of the two of those guys who led off thousands of games for their SEC schools. Antoine's younger brother by 3 years is Mondo Duplantis. He is a pole vaulter, which sounds out of left field, except actually, Duplantis is the one who plays the sport that no one else in his family plays. They come from a family of pole vaulters, grew up in Baton Rouge, have European roots, but have lived in Louisiana and have a somewhat amateur but very impressive pole vault set up in their backyard, and this is what that family grew up doing, Antoine included. And Mondo, at age 19, is already setting world records and is going to put pole vaulting on the map worldwide, I hope, because I've seen it in person at Vanderbilt track and field events. It is the coolest sport ever. If you ask me, pole vaulting should be more popular than football, basketball, baseball, hockey, soccer, everything else combined. It is the essence of sport. There are a lot of cool track and field type sports that, when you think about it, are the purest form of competition. But anyway, love pole vaulting. Wanted to give Mondo Duplantis a shout out. So there it is. Mondo Duplantis' freshman year vaulting at LSU last year was actually his only season. He is widely sought after for both international competition, which he is allowed to do as an NCAA athlete, and endorsements, which he's not allowed to do as an NCAA athlete. If he isn't already, he's going to be the best pole vaulter in world history. So he gives up the college club. Got a year of it, though. Stayed in his hometown. Sure, he had a great time. But a name to keep an eye on. All right. Hope to see you folks Saturday at the Vanderbilt football game, 11 a.m. You've been anchoring down and listening up with me, Max Herz. It's the Anchor Down Podcast on ESPN. 102.5 The Game.